You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Interstate Batteries has been a proud supporter of the Sportsman's Nation since day one. So if you're looking for any type of batteries, whether it's for your truck, your car, your trail cameras, your rangefinder, stop into a local Interstate Batteries retail location. There are thousands upon thousands of them all over the United States. Talk with a battery specialist and get the batteries that you need to go on with your life. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Welcome to the Missouri Woods and Water Podcast. I'm your host, Nate Thomas. With me today, my co-host, Micah.
What's going on?
Nothing, dude.
Exciting one today.
I'm excited about it. It was a good one. Today we got my buddy, Stacy Smith, with Pure Luck Taxidermy on to talk about all things taxidermy. Basically, kind of from field to finished, what a hunter can expect with taxidermy.
Yep, we cover all the bases. So if you have any questions about taxidermy and stuff, this one should answer those for
the most part. Yeah.
You know?
And I'm really hoping to actually be calling Stacy for taxidermy soon.
Well, that's always the plan anyways.
Yeah. I think I've been talking to him lately about our fifth wheels more than I have taxidermy, and that makes me sad. Because not that I don't like talking about other stuff, but we're sitting in his shop today recording this, and so I see all these awesome deer sitting here and gives me the itch to get something done.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And we've got buddies out there. I mean, we've got an episode coming up that I won't spoil it, but it's going to change a little bit because he got something done and he put one on the ground last night.
Yeah, we were talking about it before I asked if he wanted to come on. And he's like, yeah, I can do it that day, but it's going to change because I'll probably hunt.
Yeah.
I was like, that's fine. Well, he sent me the video the next morning, and he got it done. So it's going to be a completely different episode now.
Yeah,
so.
And we've got other buddies that have been putting them on the ground. Our buddies over at Midwest Wildlife took one down.
Heck of a deer.
Yeah.
Huge mass on it.
And so congrats to Ryan on that one. Yeah. Just lots of guys that are getting them, and I'm sitting here like, do-do-do-do-do.
Yeah. I go out today, and I didn't see nothing.
Yeah. I'm hoping to go camp tomorrow, unfortunately. Tomorrow Monday? Yeah, today is Sunday, so yeah. I'm going to go tomorrow afternoon, hopefully, but if the wind takes care of me. But
it's been bad. It's been windy, really windy.
Yeah.
So
we're excited about this episode. We've had this on the docket for a while, and finally able to make it to happen with Stacy. Did have another podcast I'd like to plug that I listened to about taxidermy the other day, and it's our buddies over at the 573 podcast, another Missouri-based set of guys. They have a taxidermy episode that just came out last week. So if anybody's wanting to listen to some taxidermy episodes this time of year, should check them out. I think, can't remember for sure, but I think they're on Podbean right now. But if you're on Instagram or something, just go check them out at the 573 and, you can listen to theirs too. More the merrier. Love to support Missouri guys any chance we get. So if you don't have anything else, let's start this one.
Yeah, let's get into it.
All right, this is the Missouri Woods and Water Podcast. All right, excited about this episode today. Here with Micah again.
What's going on, guys?
What's up, dude? People have probably noticed by now that Andy hasn't been on the last few episodes.
It is harvest season.
And so he is.
Good reason for that.
He's working his full-time job and also farming right now, so the guy doesn't have 2 seconds to even.
Yeah, he's probably putting in about 20 hours a day, I'd guess.
Yeah, so you guys will hear him again at some point, but for the future, he's not going to be on for at least a few episodes. So anyways, today's episode, real excited about, got a buddy of mine, Stacy Smith with Pure Luck Taxidermy out of Odessa, Missouri, is going to come on today and talk about, sort of like the do's and the don'ts and just the basics of taxidermy and what
you need to be thinking about while you're out there.
Right now.
Yeah.
Unless you've already killed one. then yeah. you got to think about it again. But some things to think about, some crazy stories Stacy's had happen and all that stuff. So, Stacy, what's up, man?
Not much. How you guys doing?
Good. Good, good. We're actually sitting in your shop right now looking at some deer. And
it gets me really excited. I mean, I went hunting this morning, and I about flew out of the tree with as windy as it was. But coming in here kind of boosts the morale a little bit, I guess it is.
Yeah, or it makes you jealous.
Well, no, it just gets me excited. Makes all me we're doing go is out cutting there a little more.
All we're doing is cutting into Stacy's time right now. But so, Stacy, before we get started, introduce yourself. I told everybody where you're from, but you can talk about your taxidermy shop. And then I always ask guests, what's your favorite thing about the Missouri outdoors?
Gotcha. Yep, Stacy Smith. We're just south of Odessa. Got into taxidermy probably, I think it was about 17 years ago. Basically, it was due to necessity. I was a poor college kid. or that's what started it. I didn't start till 17 years ago. Went to a little class for 4 or 5 days, I think. Kind of got you just enough knowledge to be dangerous. And then you start experimenting on your own stuff, and then it just kind of went from there. Did it, like I said, because of necessity and wasn't happy with the work I was paying for, because I was poor and it was cheap work, and it was definitely cheap work. But no, we've been here for, like I said, about 17 years, whitetails mostly, a lot of life-size mammals, bobcats, foxes, coyotes. But no, we really enjoy it. It's a lot of fun. You meet a lot of great people.
Yeah. Well, and you also are a hunter. I mean, you don't get to do a lot of it.
Not anymore.
Because you're always here dealing with other people's
trophies,
which would be the downside, I think, to taxidermy is, you know, during hunting season, you get busy. And then you're here working all the time and not getting to go out. But you do get to go out and hunt some and definitely enjoy the outdoors. And is that probably something that one of your favorite things about the Missouri outdoors is just the different things that you've probably seen in this career?
Oh, I mean, between hunting and this, yeah, definitely. I mean, everything from customers bringing in an albino raccoon, just oddball, you know, 3 main beam bucks. Yeah. I mean, you just never know what kind of phone calls you get. Some of them are a little crazy. But, yeah, between just the Missouri outdoors, between you never know what you're going to see, seeing does stand up on their hind feet and fight. I mean, between the business and being in the outdoors, it's just unbelievable. Like I said, you just don't know what you're going to see, and it's always exciting. You don't know what's going to pop out next.
You don't get that stuff sitting on the couch.
Exactly.
Right. Well, I think this is a perfect time of the year. I mean, it would have been nice to do this episode a while ago, but to talk about sort of the do's and the don'ts of taxidermy. And I thought, who better to talk to it about than a taxidermist?
Yeah.
Who is a friend of mine, so it kind of works out well.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll kind of get into everything about what should the hunter do when they're out in the field? What should the hunter do when they are dealing with you? But a lot of those, and especially after they've gotten their mount back, what can they do to make sure it continues to be a work of art for the next 80 years or whatever? But those things shouldn't be things that come up after the shot, right?
No, yeah.
People should have stuff in their minds.
Yeah, you should be planning ahead. For instance, if you're, say, you're hunting public ground or you're hunting extremely remote private ground where there's no vehicle access or it's a two-wheel cart kind of thing, be sure you have a sled or a two-wheel cart or something. If you harvest a buck, you start dragging it out of the woods, 9 times out of 10 you're either gonna ruin the cape or you're gonna have an ugly cape, because it will literally rub the hair right off the shoulder, off that right front point of that shoulder, and you're gonna have a huge bald spot.
And you're not magic maker. You can't grow hair back.
No.
You can't, you know, put hair back.
We can't make the deer any bigger than it was when we got it. We can't make hair grow back. We can sew up some holes and patch some stuff up, but, you know, take your time, be careful. And if there's ever a question, always call. Google is your friend. I have diagrams. People call me, hey, how do I cape my deer? I will text them 7-8 different diagrams. I send them videos. I mean, most of the time it works. Sometimes it still doesn't work. Yeah. But, you know, the more knowledge you go in with, the better product you're going to get at the end. Yeah. Because your deer is perfect the way it was when you shot it. You can only harm it from there. And I can only make it look as good as it was when I receive it.
Right. That's a perfect point. And I got lucky. I'm the first buck I ever shot. Stacy's a friend of mine, so I called him. I'm like, hey, I'm going to cape it. I think I'm going to mount it. And you're like, well, bring it over. I'll show you how. And hung it up right there in that hoist, and he showed me how to cape a deer. I still probably would do a bad job, but, you know, seeing it is really nice. But that's a good point. I mean, especially if you're deep in public or even on your private, if you don't have a sled, knowing how to cape it, if you're going to quarter the deer out and pack it out,
right?
Knowing how to cape it is important.
Definitely. Knowing how to cape it, and like I said, and if you do have to drag it out from a long ways, you know, something happens, your plan fell through, somehow keeping that shoulder from dragging the ground makes all the difference in the world. Whether you tie a coat around its neck so it's underneath that shoulder, like I said, a cart or a sled or a drag thing.
A tarp, something.
Tarp, just anything. Just something there to keep that ground from just literally tearing that hair right off the front edge of that shoulder.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense, you know.
And you make a good point. That deer was perfect when you shot it. You can only do damage from there on out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's going to be a shoulder mount or even if it's going to be a Euro or whatever they're going to do. But that's kind of a perfect point is it can only get worse from there.
Right.
Right.
And that's, you know, when you're field dressing it, you know, stop at the brisket. Stop when you hit that breastplate. You go through the ribs. You feel that solid breastplate.
Mm-hmm.
Just stop right there. You can reach up in there, clean it out just as well. And then, like I said, diagrams are your friend.
YouTube, probably.
YouTube, yeah. I mean, yeah. And, you know, you're out in the woods. Even if you're remote, you're 9 times out of 10 in the state of Missouri, you're going to have phone signal. Call your taxidermist. Call me. Call your buddy. Call someone that knows what they're doing or that you verified know what they're doing.
Right.
And, you know, ask them for help or, hey, what do I do here? You know, always, you know, like the old saying goes, measure twice, cut once. You don't want to cut and then, oh, wait a minute, was that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the most important work, I mean, you do an important job, but like you just said a couple minutes ago, you can only work with what you were given. So it's only, I mean, if you really think about it, the hunter is the first step in this process of taxidermy.
And probably the most important because, you know, everyone makes mistakes, but when something comes to me in good condition, it's going to leave in that same condition. You know, it goes to, you know, I used a couple different tanneries. They are both top of the line, top notch, zero issues with hundreds and hundreds of whitetail capes. So in my opinion, the hunter is the most important step. Not only, like I said, field dressing, not dragging it out, but just getting it to the taxidermist. Like I tell people, they'll say, you know, hey, I got a deer I need to bring to you. Oh, yeah, you get it recently? Oh, yeah, I got it first weekend. Well, first week and make it. I'll find out that, you know, it was during youth season.
Right.
And here it is the second weekend of rifle season. They'll be like, you know, that deer's been in my shop and it's been, you know, 35 degrees. So it's fine. It doesn't smell at all. The way I tell people is treat that deer. If you cape it off and you have that deer head and that raw hide sitting there, if you can't freeze it, treat it like you would a piece of steak.
Right.
If it sits out longer than you would let a steak sit out, then I don't want it because it's probably going to be junk. Can I get you a spare cape? Yes, I have those. But treat that cape and that head like you would something you're going to eat because once it starts to spoil, the hair will start to slip. I mean, issues, I mean, it just goes downhill in a hurry.
Yeah, if you treat it like a piece of meat, you wouldn't leave a steak sit out for 24 hours.
Right.
I mean, even if it was 25 degrees outside, you know, if you don't have plans on getting it straight to a taxidermist, which, I mean, I've had it before where I'm trying to think of my last one I had you do. I think I had him at home for a few days. I usually get them right to you.
Right.
As soon as I can, but I caped it. And we'll talk about rolling it and stuff, too, how you like to see that done. But caped it, and it was in the freezer until I could get with you a couple days later.
Right.
And that probably goes a long way, obviously, because, yeah, if they have it riding around in their truck for 3 weeks showing people, it's just sitting back there, bacteria starts growing. And
yeah, once I mean, immediately when an animal dies, bacteria starts growing on the skin immediately, period. Predators are the worst by far. Whitetails aren't as bad, but it does start happening. So the longer you keep that, you know, in a fresh state where it's not thawed, or it hasn't been processed and salted dry, then you are running the risk of that bacteria literally eat the hair off at the base, and then you have these big bald spots. You know, you take it to your taxidermist. Your taxidermist can do what he needs to do, cut the skull plate off. If you want to show it to your buddies, go back a day or two later. You can go around, brag to your buddies, show it to them then. But there's no need to have the whole head or the whole deer in the back of your truck for 3 or 4 days, letting that cape spoil on you, and then you're going to have to get a replacement.
So, right. So ideally, the quicker you can get it off the body and into a freezer, the better.
Yeah, the quicker you can get it off and get it cooled down. Mm-hmm. Now, I will say, like, if you're maybe out west hunting something big like an elk, you want to make sure that hide is cooled down. Because I have had outfitters, early season elk, they skin them off, and they fold them up and roll them up, and I get them 2 weeks later, and the inside's never frozen. It's still, when it thaws out, the inside was never frozen, you can tell, and it's turned green.
Oh, no, wow.
Because it's so insulated. The hair is so insulated that it can't penetrate all the way through there, it takes such a long time that it spoils, where, you know, if they would have just laid it out in the shade or in a walk-in cooler even, which walk-in coolers can be the devil because it's like a big refrigerator and bacteria still grows.
Yeah.
But at least cool it down to where it's 30 degrees, not 70 degrees, and then roll it up and then freeze it.
Gotcha. Is there a certain way that people should roll a cape? I mean, I've always seen the cape rolled where the head is sitting on, you know, the way I've done it, and then I've had it done a few times when I was in a hurry, where the head's sitting right on top of the cape, and they've rolled it basically from the bottom, and the hair's always facing out.
Yeah, always keep the hair facing out and roll it up. It's not that vital how you roll it up. The main thing is you double bag it or triple bag it, get as much air out as you can. Now, this is if you're leaving the head and the antlers attached to the hide. Then you want to get all the air out, and then you still need to get to a taxidermist within a couple months, even if it's in the freezer, because the modern day frost-free freezers pull moisture out. So if you have just a deer head, you stick it in a box, put it in your freezer, or you have it in a bag with the bag open, it's going to start pulling moisture out, and those ears will turn into bricks. I mean, it'll pull all the moisture out of your ears and out of your eyelids and your nose and lips, and the ears will literally start curling because it pulls all that moisture out. But if you have a whole head with a cape in a freezer, you know, double bag it, triple bag it. Now, if you are the type of person who knows how to skin one off the head, put the nose, ears, lips on the inside, roll it up towards the brisket, double bag it, get all the air out, and you have a much, much longer shelf life.
I was just going to ask, if someone, let's say, shot one tomorrow, and they knew they didn't have the money, we'll get into this stuff later, but they knew they didn't have the money to bring it into you for 6 months, so they knew they were going to at least have it in the freezer for 6 months, you would go about it a little differently then at that point?
If it's going to be 6 months, I would say, you know, talk to me, talk to your tax number, say, hey, you know, what would you charge me just to cape it off the head and bag it? Then, you know, a person could bring it to me for a nominal fee. I do that. And then if they bring it back to me for the shoulder mount, obviously that would come off of the shoulder mount because that is part of my work process.
Gotcha.
But at least then you know it's done.
It's done right.
Yeah. Right. And I would not recommend this to anyone just because I got lucky, but I've literally had some of my own that I, of course, don't have time to do my own work. But I've had some of my own.
That one over there, isn't that one like from a decade ago you shot?
Yeah, I actually still have my deer from 2010, 2008. And last year, I just did 2015's a couple weeks ago. But no, if you bag them right, if you have it skinned off, completely off the skull, you bag it right, get all the air out, you know, 6-7 years. But I got lucky. It doesn't work that way every time. So, I mean, I would by no means recommend that, but that just kind of tells you if you do it correctly, it can stay, it has a longer shelf life, where if you have the whole head with the antlers, it's hard to get all that, well, you can't get all the air out because you have the antlers and the head in the way. Mm-hmm. And it's going to freeze or burn much, much quicker that way.
Gotcha. Makes sense. So that would be for somebody that's maybe knows they're going to get in and into you faster. Hey, if they got to, if it's got to sit in the freezer for a month, whatever. But you know, if I'm sitting there going, hey, I, you know, maybe I killed two this year, and my wife's like, you are not doing two. So maybe one's got to sit, you know, for a while.
Right.
Luckily, I would be able to just say, hey, can we do this, and I'll
just
I'll
don't tell
it.
My wife.
Yeah, there's that.
I'll slip it the cash underneath the table.
How did that second deer come home?
Oh, he was. It was always there, babe. Don't worry about that one.
I could probably get by with that. She might not notice.
Yeah.
I won't say anything.
Yeah.
That's funny. But I think that's a good point, because there's, you know, there's people out there that think about that stuff before they call.
Right.
And some probably don't, sure. I mean, some probably, you know, think you should store the hide for them while they're waiting, and, you know, it sits here for 3 years, that sort of stuff. I think I listened to a show one other time where I wish I could give him credit. It was another show about taxidermy where he said, I am not a storage facility. I'm a taxidermist.
Yep. And that's, you know, like before we started here, I was showing you some of the antlers over there that, you know, kid's first deer. I've had the antlers, the hide, he brought it in, dropped it off with no deposit. I've had it for, I believe, 5 years now. You know, no deposit, still here, storing it. The hide's still in the freezer. Like I said, it's kid's first deer. I'm not going to get rid of the hide just in case.
Yeah,
he comes down the road. You know, I don't want me to be
the bad guy.
Bad guy, you know, that threw the kid's hide away or used it for someone else.
Right. Well, and this is a perfect segue into the next kind of topic, or the next portion of this is, you know, when they've gotten the deer, they've got it out of the woods, they've caped it or whatever they're planning on doing, and now they're finally to the spot where, hey, I'm bringing it to Pure Luck Taxidermy or whoever else. What are some things they should expect to when they're at the taxidermist, you know, ready to, especially when choosing a taxidermist, right?
Right.
I'm lucky enough that I know other hunters that could have told me what taxidermist to use. And I also was lucky enough that I had a friend that happens to be a pretty well-respected taxidermist. So I didn't have to really find a taxidermist.
Didn't have to hunt around for one.
Right, but there's other people out there that don't know anybody. What are some things that you might recommend somebody do when they're even just trying to look for a taxidermist? There's a lot of guys out there, I'm sure, that are just trying to learn or just getting into it. It might do subpar work or might not, but what would you kind of say some things they should look for right up front, and then we'll get into when they get to you?
Yes. Whenever you're looking, start online if possible. You know, look at their work. Talk to your friends. If your friends have it, swing by their house, look at the work that, you know, the taxidermist has done for them. And then, you know, definitely look at what is in that taxidermist shop. I mean, things change. I've seen life situations change where a person does excellent work, they fall on hard times for whatever reason, and the quality goes down. There is a taxidermist out there for everybody in every price range, from it's not going to look real great to it's going to look awesome, just phenomenal, and everywhere in between. Turnaround. There are some taxidermists out there that have, you know, a year and a half, 2 year turnaround. Some of them are on the low price scale, some of them are on the high price scale. But the main thing I would say, you know, look at their work, look at the, you know, get up close, look at the eyes, look at the ears. I mean, if the ears are an inch thick, there's a problem. If the eyelashes, like I showed you the amount I was messing with, someone else had done, the eyelashes are going up at a 45 degree angle. Deer's eyelashes don't look like that. This thing looks like it's a little fairy getting ready to fly away. You know, just little things. You need to educate yourself. You know, eyelashes need to kind of be at a downward angle. Your ears should be thin with straight edges and crisp. The eyes should look like a deer eye and not look like somebody, you know, put a pound of Bondo in there around them to fill it in.
Mm-hmm.
Lip lines. Nasal passage. It should have a nasal passage. You should be able to look in and it look like you're looking at a nose. You know, the forms come, you have to carve them out. Because foam in there.
It's so just solid.
It's solid. I mean, you have the nasal opening, the nose opening for the and the wings of the nose, but it stops right there. I mean, you have to carve that out and put a septum in the center there and airbrush it. And, I mean, there's a lot of things that, you know, people say, I can tell the difference, but I don't know what the difference is.
Yeah. That's one thing I've always kind of noticed. If I see a mount that I don't like, it's almost always because it looks like the deer's smiling at me. That's what I notice first, is that, why is the damn thing smiling? Or, you know, it looks like it's, you know, trying to smile, but it's like a kid that doesn't know how to smile right. in pictures or whatever. And that's something I've always noticed. And then I've always noticed noses. You know, I like.
Yeah, if you get the nose wrong, I mean, it's definitely, you can definitely tell.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, if the nose looks like it's a blackberry or a blueberry, it's just all these huge bumps, and then it's just a flat black, maybe a little gloss on it. Google images. I mean, I use them in the shop. I have, you know, as you guys can see, I have pictures of deer and deer noses and eyes everywhere. And that's to help me get it where I think it should be. But if it looks wrong to the customer, I mean, although, you know, sometimes customers are incorrect. I've never had an incorrect customer, though. But,
that's good.
You know, sometimes, you know, if you think it looks odd, if you think something's off, then it's off. Because I have seen a lot of lower quality taxidermy where people couldn't tell the difference until you put it next to a nicer piece.
Yeah.
If you can walk up to a piece by itself and you're like, man, something's wrong with that, I guarantee there's probably something major wrong. You just, you know, never noticed exactly
right.
what it was.
It's
hard to spot exactly right. what you're,
especially
what
if it,
right.
if it's your first one. And I have deer mounts, he has deer mounts. I look at that thing every day. I know what it's supposed to look like.
Right.
But if I go into somebody's house, or if it's their first one, they're not going to pick out those little details and those little things that are off and stuff like that. So
yeah. right.
educate yourself on what needs to be done right. So,
and that's, always in person. You know, like I said, look online, look at your friend's mounts, see, but there's no, you know, no substitute for going into the taxidermist and looking in person.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I thought it was a good point to bring up, just because there's not everybody has a taxidermist picked out yet, and somebody might be killing their first deer this year. And there's even if it's a good taxidermist, it might not be the right fit for you. Right. Maybe right. you and him or her don't get along or something, or they don't like doing full sneaks with the ears out, and the customer wants that, and that's exactly what they want, and the taxidermist might say, nope, I'm not doing that. Doesn't look right, or something like that.
Right.
I'm sure you pretty much will give somebody what they want, but there's certain mounts that you're like, that doesn't look normal.
Their personal opinion, I don't like straight, but I'm not the one that's going to look at it every day.
Right.
That mount behind me I just did is straight.
Mm-hmm.
I'm personally not a fan, but hey, again, I'm going to do it to the best of my ability to make it look great, but I'm not going to be the one looking at it every day. Get up, go to bed.
Right.
I see this deer. If you want a straight, you get a straight. But and it is kind of, sometimes it is funny. You'll have a customer call you, or a potential customer. Okay. You know, what do I need to do? How much does it cost? How much is the deposit? And we go through it, and they're like, okay, well, as soon as I get him, I'll bring him in. And you're like, wait, you haven't even got a deer yet. You know, I'm all about being optimistic, but it's kind of humorous. But at the same time, they're prepared.
You'd rather be somebody prepared than going, oh, no.
Than the guy who has it in the bed of his truck and it's been there for 3 days. And it's like, wow, wait a minute. I was going to get this mounted. Now it's starting to smell funny. Where am I going to take it? You know, but yeah, it is definitely do your homework, because the price range is huge between the low end and the high end. The quality range is huge, and the turnaround time. And you just have to figure out what level of quality you want, what price you're willing to pay, and what turnaround you're willing to live with, and go from there.
Yeah. And I would guess, this is just me, some dude that's not prepared that might be driving around with a deer in the back of his truck that now all of a sudden has maggots all over the place. You don't want that shit in your shop.
No. If it smells, it doesn't come in.
Well, right. And I'm just like thinking out loud. If there's maggots all over, and now you have that in your shop, and you're working with a knife and slice yourself or something, I mean, doesn't that put there's a danger factor now with bacteria being all over the
right.
place? And, you know, I would guess that there's a lot of taxidermists and out there that turn around and take it somewhere else because I don't want that at that point. You know, you could screw yourself out of a cool mount just by not being prepared.
Yeah, that's and I mean, as you look around here, it is a mess, but it's clean. There's not blood. There's not stink.
Doesn't smell in here.
It's a mess because, well, that's how I work. But it's not nasty. It's not gross. I've had people, bring a European. I want a European mount. They bring it to the shop, and I'm like, whoa, leave it outside. I mean, it just, no. I will give you tips or hints to work it yourself before I will let it in because I can't have something rotten in here with customers coming in. Right. With finished mounts in here that are going to absorb that odor. And I've told people many times, they'll be, oh, it doesn't smell. It doesn't smell. I'm like, well, if you show up with it and it does smell, I'm going to have to make you take it back. So I don't want you to waste a trip. Right. I mean, I'm not trying to be rude, but
yeah,
I don't want, and that's not even mentioning the fact I don't want to smell it.
Right.
I mean,
right.
Not to mention that.
I mean, it's bad for
bacteria.
Business.
Well, you think about it. It is. The thing's got freaking maggots in the back of your truck. So your wife probably, or somebody's probably finally bitching at you to get it the hell out of here. So now you bring it to your house. Why do you think I want the damn thing here?
And dump it to me. Right.
You know?
And that's, perfect instance. I actually had a gentleman shoot one the other day with his bow, didn't find it. He knew. He called. I said, there's no way. Because it was actually found in the water.
Oh, that sucks.
And it had been there for a couple days. I'm like, sorry, that cape's not going to be any good. He brought just the head over. I took the skull plate. He took everything the remains else and threw it in his trash. Because I just can't have something that stinks here.
Sure.
For many, multiple reasons.
Yeah. Well, that's a good segue into at least, how somebody should choose a taxidermist. And then they've chosen you. They're going to bring it to Pure Luck, Stacy Smith. What are some things they should expect, when they show up with their deer for the first time or even when they want to use you? Some things to kind of think about when you're going to use a taxidermist. There's plenty of people that have now done it multiple times, but there's still always that person that's done it the first time.
Right.
Or they used somebody else last year and they didn't like them, so now they're choosing someone else. What are some things they should expect to do with you up front?
One of the main things, which is easy now because of the Telecheck app on your phone, is I need your confirmation number and license number. That's number, first and foremost, when the game warden comes through to do my checks or to swing by and say, hey, I have to have all my I's dotted and T's crossed, so I need your information so that I'm legal.
Right.
Otherwise,
you're not doing it.
Worst case scenario, someone says, I can text it to you later today. If I don't have it in 24 hours, come get your stuff or I'll leave it at the curb because I can't have that.
Right.
I have to verify everything to the, I'm not investigating, but I have to do what I have to do, to keep myself out of trouble and make sure I'm running the business above board.
Right.
The other thing is have an idea of possibly of where you're going to put it. Deer, even right turns, left turns, they're subtle enough.
Mm-hmm.
It really doesn't matter. You can put a right turn anywhere in a room, and it's going to look good. But if you have, I want it on this wall, and here's where my TV is, and I want that thing looking right at me, kind of have that thought in the back of your head so you know which turn you want. Poses. Typically, I have plenty of examples in here and posters showing the different forms I use. If I'm lucky by deer season, all these deer will be out of here because they're done and they need to go home. Ears forward, ears back, one of each, semi-sneak, semi-upright, right turn, left turn, straight. They're all fairly subtle. Like I said, the turns are subtle, but just have an idea.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have another mount, some people want them looking at each other. And then I probably drive some customers crazy because they'll say, I want a right turn. And it's not because I don't think they know the difference. It's because I don't want to screw up their mount.
What
I'm
right?
Like, exactly. Now, you want a right turn, yes. So I was overemphasized. So the deer will be turning to the deer's right. So when you're looking head on, its nose is going to be going to your left. And once we get through that, we're good.
Okay.
Because I don't want to be the one shows up and like, wait a minute, I want the other turn.
That's the wrong way.
So to clarify for people, this is a perfect point. When they're talking about right turn, left turn, that is the deer's right or left.
That is the deer's turn. That's not, when you're looking at it, it's not a right turn isn't turning to your right. It's the deer. How is that deer turning? If it's a right turn, the deer is turning to the deer's right.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's, I mean, not everybody knows that.
It's,
you know?
It sounds stupid, but, you know.
Something to think about.
It's something, I mean, it's something, you know, 20 years ago. What do you mean right turn? Well, yeah, you know, I didn't know which, you know, my right or his right. But it's the deer's, which way the deer's turning is the turn that it is called.
Right. That's cool. So some other things to think about. I mean, you require, well, I know one thing that you do that is probably more for you than anything. You go through the conservation number or the confirmation number and all that, and the tag and everything when they bring it in. But I know when I've brought my deer into you, you've got a sheet of paper that we write down all the tag information, and you write down all the information about me, how much I've given you, put, you know, deposit, all that stuff, and also the mount, because when you get however many deer you get in here a year, it's probably important that I get what I told you I wanted.
Definitely.
And, you know, you're just not going to remember those things.
Right.
Now, do you, when I first brought, you know, when I first bring a deer into you, if the person doesn't know exactly what they want, do you give them a little time sometimes? Is that something you do? Because, you know, it's, you're not going to have that form on that deer tomorrow.
No. And that brings up a good point. When someone comes in, I do have a contract. You're going to fill out your name, address, phone number, contact information. In the top corner, I'm going to have your item number. I have safety bands, plastic bands they seal semis with. Every number, I have two of each.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, right now I'm on, like, number 620. So I have two numbers that say 620 on them. One goes around the antlers. One goes through the hide. They're safety tags. That way they can never be separated. You know, 620 goes with 620.
So my hide that gets sent to the tannery is my hide that's going to come back.
Is your hide that's going to come back. There's no way, because I've tested them, and I've accidentally broke them and had to zip tie one back on is my own, luckily. But, you know, it's, you know, you just can't unplug it. You just can't unplug the tag and put a different tag. You're going to get your antlers with your hide. And, yeah, if you don't know exactly what you want and you're like, you know what, I do like a semi-sneak. I think I want the ears back, but I don't know right or left. You can text me, call me later down the road, because tannery turnaround time is probably going to be a minimum of 4 months. And, you know, another thing a customer has to realize is we get in 90% of our work in about 90 days. So it goes from a 6 month turnaround to a 12 month turnaround in 90 days. So if you don't know what you want, that's fine. But I'm still going to, that contract I have you is a carbonless copy, two sheets.
Mm-hmm.
So I take down all the information you do know as far as what you want, along with, you know, your personal information, your signature saying it was, you know, a legal harvest, following all the rules, all that good stuff. I'm going to give you a copy, and then I keep a copy for my records. And it'll also have the deposit. Typically, my deposits are around 50% on whitetails. I just make it an even 300, which is less than 50%, but it's just simple.
Mm-hmm.
Cash check charge. It's just, you don't have to mess with odd numbers, just, you know, here's what we are, here's where we go.
Right.
So yeah. And then I would assume that probably all taxidermists, they expect some sort of deposit. I mean, because what's the point of, because people forget about their stuff, or they get to thinking, I don't got the money now, so why would a taxidermist go out of their way of doing all this work and then come find out we can't get a hold of you anymore? So right. Or something along those lines. So expect some sort of deposit. And, no matter where you go.
And definitely, yeah, like personally, like I said, mine's 300 to cover my expenses, because this deer sitting on this wall over here, obviously people out there can't see it, but that has been, I called the customer in June of 2019 to tell him it was done, and it's still sitting there.
Yeah.
The deposit covers my tanning, my shipping to the tannery, my shipping back, the form, the eyes, the paste, everything goes into it. So, I mean,
you're out of time.
I'm out time. Well, I'm actually out a little bit, out of pocket.
Sure.
I'm out all my time, but without that deposit, I'm just, I've lost a lot more.
You've lost more.
Yeah. Right.
You have a, I don't know about the state of Missouri. This I was listening to another podcast, like I said one time before. He was in a state out west, and there he actually has legal grounds to sell a mount after a certain number of days. I don't remember what it is, but I mean, at what point do you go, all right, I've had this thing sitting on my wall for four years or 5 years or whatever. I mean, have you ever been like, screw it, I'm selling it?
I've been really lucky. That one's been here for over a year, year and a half maybe. I had one in here that had been done for over 2 years. Out of the blue, customer calls me, say, hey, I fell on some hard times. I'm like, no problem. And he said, I still don't have the money, but I'm trying to. And he put forth the effort. That day, he brought me over $50. And then 2 weeks later, he brought me $50. And he kept bringing me money until it was paid in full, and it took him a few months. And, that's the big deal. If you fall on hard, things happen.
Sure.
Yeah, life probably, changes.
Yeah, just be in contact with them.
Right, just be honest with me. Shoot me straight. Hey, I lost my job. I'll give you a little bit at a time. That's fine. I'm going to keep the mount until it's paid in full. But as long as you're making the effort, I get it. Life's tough. Right.
Yeah.
And the same with deposits. I require a $300 deposit before I will start putting a mount together. If you show up at my shop, I don't have any credit cards on me, my wife's got the checkbook, I have $50. Then give me the $50. But no, and I tell them, and just, I'm not going to actually start putting that mount together. And I'm probably not even going to send the hide off to the tannery until I get the deposit. Because, the tanning alone and shipping is over $100. So I'm not going to go upside down on it.
You've got other customers that did pay their deposit that, are going to take precedent probably too.
Right.
And you can do the thing that we talked about earlier, right? Let's say I show up and I want you to do a mount, but I'm broke as hell right now. And so how about can I pay you to cape it off for me? Take the skull out and everything and get it clean, and then I'll come and get it and go put it in my freezer.
Definitely. Say, you don't have the money to do it right now. You have your deer caped off. We have a head, head and a cape. I will cape it off, bag it, tag it for you, give it back to you. You take it to your freezer. I'd probably charge around $50. And then when you bring it to me to mount, obviously that $50 will come off of the price because that's part of my job is doing
sure.
that.
Right.
But I'm not going to just do it and hand it to you because when people are bringing in deer to me, taking the time to skin one and bag it is always during the rush because if you're bringing me a deer, there's other people bringing me deer. So yeah. I can't do yours for free when I have paying customers with their stuff behind you. So, basically it's goodwill money. And when you bring it to me for a mount and you're ready to proceed with it, then that comes right off your bill.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And if you decide and they decide they're never going to be able to get it done, then you got, your time's covered as right. far as the $50
and they've got,
they got their stuff. So then it's, right. They washed, everything's yeah. done.
They have their stuff. I got paid for my time. Right. And then, if they decide not to, then fine. Or they go somewhere else. Every person got their own prerogatives.
Right. So yeah, those are all good points. So, especially, if they don't have the money, they don't have the money, but at least they've got their cape and, you got paid for doing it. So, right. Deposit's been made. They've got their deer picked out or their mount, their form picked out, I guess I'd call it. And you're done. They come pick it up. And, that's probably a fun time for you. I know you've done hundreds of them in your life now, but when someone comes and picks their deer up, for that first time after last year, whenever they killed it, that's still got to still be a little fun for you is the first time they get to see it again.
Yeah, definitely. It's always good to see a happy hunter. And, you do the work, you put it up on the wall, you take a picture of it, you think, that looks pretty good. But then when the customer comes and they acknowledge that they're happy with it, it just makes it, okay, all the time I spent out here and all the hours and everything, it's worth it.
Right. Yeah. So, post mount pickup, I've always, ever since, I've had deer now, I want to take care of them and they'll get dusty or whatever. Right. Do you have any tips and tricks for anybody on how to take care of a mount so that it'll last them forever?
I mean, honestly, keep it simple. If you have a wood-burning fireplace, I would recommend, if that is your primary source of heat, your wood stove, wood-burning fireplace, keep it in another room. The dry heat will absolutely devastate a mount over years. The extreme heat, you know, you have it up on the wall, typically it's going to be up toward the ceiling.
Heat rises.
Yeah, you get the heat rising, you get that intense dry heat up there. I mean, it's a piece of leather. You got clay, you got epoxies, and the extreme heat, you know, heat and then cool off and heat and cool off, is, it dries them out. It's really tough on them. Keep them out of sunlight. You know, if you have a big picture window, or, you know, have an open ceiling with large windows up in the upper part of that open, the sun will come in and fade them. And it's amazing. People don't think about that, but the sun will fade that hide, and, you know, one side's going to be real light colored and the other one's going to be dark colored, or, you know, something like that. And people don't think about that, but the sun will definitely fade them out. I have mounts in here, my personal ones that have been in here for years and years, and I can tell sun fade just from having the windows open over the last 15 years.
Yep, right.
But extreme heat, direct sunlight, and then brain fart. And then, you know, they get dusty. They collect dust. I advise, you know, once a month or week, or depending on how you like to clean, just take a damp cloth or damp paper towel and just wipe it down. If it gets, you know, you miss it a couple months.
And you're talking about the antlers and the hide?
Antlers, hide, everything.
With just, the hair, correct?
With the hair. Just go with the hair. Just a damp cloth, not soaking wet, because you don't want it to be so wet that it gets the leather rehydrated underneath. You just want to, something that'll, it's damp enough, it'll pick up that dust. Go with the hair. You know, if it gets away from you, you know, I forgot to dust it for 6 months, take it out to your shop, take a blowgun, stand back 6 feet or so and dust it off. And then, you know, if you're putting your mount up and down or you move it around, and I have friends who are customers and they had my mounts and I had to have a conversation with them. They use their fingers and they get their fingers in the hair and then they move it around and then they leave. Literally, you can see the finger marks where the hair's, you know, get, like, I use dog brushes.
Okay.
Just a grooming brush for a dog and just start brushing it. I mean, something that's been mounted a long time, the hair will have a little bit of memory which way it was. Start brushing it. If it doesn't go right back down immediately, you know, take a damp cloth and wipe over it and then brush it. Because nothing looks worse than you're looking at this beautiful mount and you have finger marks on both sides of the neck.
Yep.
And it's standing straight up and you're like, what is going on with that thing?
That brings up, what's a good, is it okay to pick them up by their antlers and stuff like that? Or is it, that's probably frowned upon? I mean, how good is the antlers actually attached to that form or whatnot? I mean,
I carry them by the antlers.
Okay.
Antlers, I use deck screws. I use three-inch deck screws, and they go down into a piece of half-inch plywood that is in the mannequin, in the form. And you get to thinking about it, the antlers are the heaviest part of the mount.
Yeah.
So if you're grabbing by the antlers, you just have the styrofoam hanging.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, I move them around. Usually I have one hand on the base of an antler and the other one I have on the brisket of the deer or the bottom of the shoulder point,
right. And
move them around like that.
Okay. I remember I called you last after we finished our basement, and now my deer are all downstairs because my wife made me move them. But, and my biggest deer that I've killed so far, I was putting him up and I missed the screw or something and it started falling. So I just grabbed him and I had all those finger marks like you're talking about. And I call Stacy and I'm like, dude, oh, it's all right. Dogs bark. I called you and I'm like, hey, what do I do? I've got all these marks on my deer, looks uglier than hell now. And that's what you told me to do is I put a little dampness on it. And then I got one of my dog's brushes out and they're gone. But yeah, you're right. Cause I just totally foobarred it because just to keep it from falling, it was just boom. It probably would have been better for it to fall and just picked it up. But.
And speaking of that, that also leads me to the one thing that another thing my customers probably think I'm crazy. When they come to pick up their mount, it's all done. Paperwork's filled. Payment's been made. They're ready to leave. I always tell them the last thing before they leave, I tell them this is going to sound stupid, but be sure you hit the hanger. you've got a hanger screwed on the back of that form. Make sure that's what you're hanging on, because that hide is also wrapped around the back of that plywood and stapled on. And when that hide dries, in between the staples there, you slide down, a screw will catch on that hide, and it'll hold it for a little bit. But then you're going to walk away, you're going to hear a thud, and you're going to want to cry.
Yeah.
Because it's going to hit the floor. So always, as stupid as it sounds, make sure you hit the hanger.
Yeah, and I've got several deer from you now, and they're heavy-duty hangers.
Yes.
And my last mount was, I don't even know what it's called, but he comes out of the wall a little bit sideways.
Offset.
So, yeah, sure. And so the hanger is not right in the middle of the mount. It's offset to probably offset for that weight. And so when I was putting holes in the wall to figure out where I put them in the middle. And then I'm like, shit. And I had to move everything, but it worked out. But yeah, they're substantial hangers, and you got plenty of room. I mean, there's, you know, 2 inches or whatever, an inch worth of room to be able to get that. But
right.
That's a good
point.
Probably
want to make sure you mount it on a stud, too, on the wall.
Yep, make sure you hit a stud. Definitely. It doesn't take much to hold them.
Right.
But, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Sheetrock's not going to do it.
No, it's not.
So, here into my next thing, and you know, I thought that was a good, you know, basic. All right, from field to finished, how does a hunter, you know, need to act or do? How do they need to do things and act when they're choosing their taxidermists after they've gotten their harvest? So kind of a nice overview from, you know, field to finished on what people can do. But I always like to ask a fun question, because I've heard you before. What are some of the craziest things you've seen before? I know you were telling us about the water thing before.
Oh, yes.
But, like, what are some crazy things you've seen as a taxidermist now for the last 2 decades?
The water thing. People would not notice this. I never knew it until I got into this. If a person hangs their deer by the back legs and they're going to hang it, and, you know, maybe grandpa told them to hose it out to clean it out or put bags of ice inside the chest cavity to cool it down, when that water migrates, it's going to go down. Or when that ice melts, it's going to run out. It's going to migrate down. And I'll get in a deer and its head will be twice the size of a deer. It looks cartoonish. It is so swollen. And that head is full of water. So as you're skinning it, literally every cut you make, red water is just running out. That is not needed. Water, and that's another thing. As far as water goes, you want anything dry. Whether you kill a bobcat or a coyote or a deer, you know, it's got blood on or something, don't hose it down. Because the water promotes bacteria. Bacteria makes your hide slip. You know, if it's bloody and muddy, just dry it off. If it's raining, take some old towels or paper towels, dry it off. But yeah, that's something I wanted to mention also.
And that's with people hanging their deer by the legs.
Right.
The back legs.
Right.
I just thought of this. How do you, if you hang a deer to gut it or work it out, do you hang it by the legs or the head side or the rear side?
I've done it both ways, but usually I do it by the legs.
Do you?
Yeah.
How about you, Stacey?
Yeah, when I'm caping one or I'm hanging one to cut it up for meat or whatever, I hang it by the back legs.
Back legs.
Because I've also had deer brought in.
Now, you do have this spiffy hoist right here, too.
It is handy.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I've had deer come in where they put a rope around the deer's neck and hung it up that way, and it runs cape. I mean, it gets rope burn, peels the hair. But you don't, if you're going to hose out a deer, hose it out while it's laying on the ground, then roll it so that all the water goes out, and then hang it up. Make sure your cape's dry.
Nice.
Ice is not needed unless it's 100 degrees. And if it's warm enough you need ice, then you should already have it somewhere, at a locker being processed or caped off. Because
there's none of that meat's.
I mean, if it's hot enough you have to put ice in it, then it's hot enough you need to do something with that meat.
Yeah, makes sense. So what's some other crazy stuff?
My
favorite story is one you told me last year, and you've probably told it to me multiple times, where you got one given to you that they wanted a shoulder mount. That was my favorite story you've told me.
Yeah, well, no, I've had several of those. And this has happened multiple times, someone calls me up, how much for a shoulder mount? All right. I give them the price, you know, turn around, deposit, we go through all that, and then they show up, and I'm like, you know, I don't realize who this is. You know, I have multiple people call me. I don't know if you're the one that called me or not.
Sure.
So you show up, and here's my deer. I want a mount. Oh, you want a European mount? Well, no, I want a shoulder mount. And literally, they have the head and like 6 inches of the upper neck. I mean, they're missing, they're missing over 2 feet of what I need.
Yeah.
And they're shocked that I can't make that into a shoulder mount. And then I point, you know, look, this is what it looks like on the wall. And see, here's what we have. And then, you know, that's happened multiple times. Then I've had the other extreme. This has happened 3 times, and it's an absolute bear. People say, yep, got it all caped out, ready for you. And they will show up and literally have half a deer. I mean, they have taken a Sawzall or a chainsaw, and they've
cut deer. But
if you look at the diagrams, you know, if you Google and find a diagram of a caped out deer or the lines of where you need to cape a deer, they followed those lines, but they left all the meat inside.
They just cut the deer in half.
No, I mean, literally, I've had deer with the front legs from the, I call it the elbow up, from the elbow up, and then the whole front shoulder and the neck, all the meat's still in there. I mean, I literally have 100 pound,
half
100
animal.
Pound half animal, and then, you know, there's no way for me to hang that really, in order to skin it off. So then I have to put plastic on the ground and waller it around on the ground, and try to skin this thing, and then, you know, department, you know, the rules, the laws are that I have to dispose of all my waste, my animal waste, in a licensed landfill, so that has to go out the trash man. So that's a whole nother subject. I don't think my trash man likes me.
But, well, and that's just, unfortunately, that's wasteful. I mean, they're wasting.
Yeah, they're wasting.
The resource that
I mean, they're wasting a lot. Yeah. And, I mean, it's irresponsible on several levels. And then I have to dispose of it because I'm not going to eat their deer because I have no idea how it's been cared for.
Right.
And I'm not going to give it to someone. Yeah. So I literally have half a deer, and then I have a 100-pound chunk of meat. And I have to put this out for the trash man. Not to mention all the normal stuff I have from the shop and from other people's deer. And then, yeah, and small mammals, it never fails. Every other person I got that gets a bobcat, a fox, or a coyote, do I need to field dress it? No, do not field dress it. Double, you know, bring it to me or double bag it, freeze it. Obviously, if it's a bobcat, it has to be tagged or checked in with your local game warden. But yeah, don't field dress. Number one, don't field dress your small mammals. And if you bring your whitetail in for me to cape it for you, it has to be field dressed.
Sure.
Because if not, once I peel it down, I go to remove the head, all the blood in that body is going to come right out on me and the floor.
Right.
So it has to be field dressed.
That you said this earlier, and I was going to say something about it and kind of forgot, about predators having a harder time with slippage and stuff like that. Is that because, and I've always read, like, predators, especially, like, around their mouths and stuff, have a harder time with slippage. I'm guessing it's because they're always
eating raw meat.
There's bacteria all over already because they might be in a gut pile eating somebody.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, that's what I figured.
Yeah, the predators... predators have a really bad time because, yeah, they have a lot more bacteria on them because they are a meat eater. Foxes are about the most delicate Missouri animal there is.
Really?
I mean, it's amazing. I can get a fox that has been cared for absolutely pristinely. I mean, it was dry outside. They harvested it. They froze immediately. They brought it to me. I thawed out. I skin it. I tan it. And the hair wants to slip on the back of the ears. The hair wants to slip on the legs. When I skin a fox, I have to do it in a hurry because just the heat from your hands will promote bacteria.
I'll be darned.
Really?
Cause they have it and just the, you know, it's absolutely amazing. Yesterday I skinned 3 bobcats that were from last season that had been frozen.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, they're not as bad. Coyotes, as far as the bacteria, foxes slip the most. No matter how well they're taken care of. But coyotes are probably the worst as far as you don't want to walk in the door when I'm doing one. Because you'll start skinning it off, and anyone that's coyote hunted or trapped and skinned a coyote knows
they stink
to high heaven. And it does not, again, you can just like fox, you can take care of them perfect, freeze them, bring them to me. and I'm peeling them off and skinning them, and their belly area and the hide on the inside of that belly turns green because of the bacteria. And that's because the bacteria inside of them from eating all this, who knows what, you know, the deer that's been laying in the ditch for 6 weeks and they just got their tummy full of it. And, you know, so you really have to be predators. Bacteria will absolutely kill you. And you have a lot more problems with slippage.
So predator, kill it, get it frozen.
Yeah. And then, you know, if it's one of those days, kind of like we talked about the elk hide earlier about how you need it to get cold all the way through and cool down. You know, if you kill a fox or a bobcat or whatever you kill and your spouse won't kill you, put it in an open bag or lay it on top of a piece of plastic in your freezer to get it cooled down real quick. And then bag it and get the air out and freeze it, because it is absolutely amazing. Like even in here yesterday, I've got the bobcats out. We're thawing them out. If you open that plastic bag, they're sitting next to each other in a tub on the floor. Mm-hmm. You have one bagged up. The other one is in a bag, but the bag is open. The one that's open will thaw out exponentially faster.
Really?
I mean, it's really amazing. Just that little letting the outside air circulate through, it'll thaw out faster.
Crazy.
And so the same thing, it'll take it longer to freeze if you bag it. You know, if it's 75 degrees and you shot a bobcat the end of rifle season, you toss it in a bag and freeze it till the game warden can check it. And I mean, you're trapping the heat inside that bag, and then that heat inside the bag, and you have it in your freezer, well, that makes condensation on the inside of the bag. So then you have moisture and heat. It takes longer to freeze. You're just negative.
That makes sense. I mean, any animals, their fur is designed to keep them warm in the winter.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And if you trap that warmth in, it's going to keep it warm.
Right.
That's kind of what it's made to do.
And then your possibility of slippage issues.
Yeah. I was looking forward to that the most, is some of the horror stories or the craziest things you've seen. You kind of have told me a little bit about everything, but that's always the funniest to me is people, and I guess it's a good thing to think this, but people think that a taxidermist is also a magician. And I can't just magically add. I'm guessing if you really had to, you could sew a hide back on. But you're talking about hours upon hours. You have to know how to sew as a taxidermist.
Well, at that point, you'd probably want to just use like a donated, because you can use a donated cape sometimes, can't you?
Yeah, I do a lot.
Because sometimes it just happens. You know, whatever. Maybe they got shot in the neck and it's just tore up.
Right.
And, you know.
And that's, right now, earlier this morning I was going through and I was inventorying my spare capes. I have like 7 right now, tan spare capes ready to roll. One of them I am going to have to use on the bow kill that was brought in a few weeks ago because, you know, Hunter couldn't find it for a couple days. It was found in water, capes trash, but they still want the shoulder mount. But yeah, there's a lot of horror stories. And yes, we can use spare capes, but, you know, then someone brings me a cape, I give them a credit or give them a discount on a European or whatever. Well, then I have to pass that price on to you. Everybody wants to use their own cape unless it is trashed or, you know, maybe it was just rubbed up or had an infection or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, just good field care, thinking about it. Yeah.
Do you have an idea, like the capes that you have right now, do you have an idea of how large that they're all going to be different sizes? Mm-hmm. And so, if you have somebody like that guy you're talking about, or that person a couple of weeks ago that found their deer in the water, so the cape's ruined, did you kind of have an idea how large that deer was and then try to match up the cape that they're going to use to at least be close to what the deer was? Or is it just, hey, you got to take what you can get at that point?
No. You can tell. I mean, you know, if I have a 140-inch deer, it's not going to have a small 18-inch neck. Unless it's from Texas or way south, you know, Mexico, New Mexico. And also, he is lucky in the fact that I did have a couple early season capes tanned and ready to roll. And one is the size that we're going to use for his.
Nice.
You know, because he shot his deer, that would have been end of September. I think around third week of September. He doesn't, you know, he didn't shoot a deer with long, bushy winter hair. Uh-huh. He shot one with a shorter,
you know, summer coat
mule, yeah, which is, they're absolutely beautiful, yep, early season coats. So I actually
until
have
they
some.
Get into that really weird ass
where it's half
like they look like a mangy dog.
The early, yeah, because yeah, that's I get some out of Kansas, youth season out of Kansas, and they are where they go from that long summer guard hair is falling out, and they're getting down to where they just have that thin coat, that thin slick coat left, mm-hmm, which is what they typically have the beginning of season before the winter coat starts growing in with it. But yeah, you get those where they kind of look almost mangy, but they're really cool.
Yeah, I bet. Awesome. Well, I think that was a good episode for people, especially this time of year. Hopefully a lot of deer are going to be hitting the ground and people are going to be using a taxidermist. And this is kind of at least a little bit of a view of what can you expect from the beginning to the end. I would really, you know, from listening to Stacy just now, would, you know, encourage people to do some homework up front on what are you going to want if you were to get a deer? How am I going to handle it out in the field? How am I going to cape something? Will I be able to get it to them? Think of all those questions beforehand so that Stacy or whoever else is working on your animal isn't going to wish they never met you. So,
yes.
Got anything else, Micah, before we hop off?
No, I think we covered most of the bases, hopefully, anyways, for people.
Stacy, you?
No, just, you know, have an idea what you want to do. But, I mean, the main thing is field care. Yeah, because if you take care of it right in the field, you throw it in the freezer, you can always do your homework later, but it's a lot easier to do the homework up front, which also leads to turnaround time. Because, like I said earlier, a deer that comes in to me today will be done 6 months. Right. A deer that comes to me in Thanksgiving is going to be done in a year. Because it all comes at once, and the turnaround time changes weekly, or actually daily for me.
Right. So I know you don't need this because you're always busy every year, but why don't you tell people how they can get a hold of you?
You find us on Facebook, Pure Luck Taxidermy. Also, my phone number is 816-590-1822. And like I'd mentioned earlier, you know, if anyone has a question about caping a deer, anything, you know, what's the turnaround time today, you know, give me a call, send me a Facebook message, text me. I get numerous texts and phone calls all hours of day and night. Just don't expect me to answer them at that time of day. I'll get back to you the next day.
Right.
Yeah, don't be afraid to reach out if you have any questions.
Nice. All right. Thanks for coming on, man. All right. That's the show today.
Hopefully everybody's got an idea in the back of their head that they're going to, I need to call this guy real quick.
Just a bunch of light bulbs. Don't chop your freaking deer's head off.
Yeah. Don't act like an idiot. Don't drag him in the back of the four-wheeler 300 yards across the cornfield, you know.
I think what we figured out today is Stacy's really good at taxidermy, but he's not a magic man.
And I'm pretty sure none of them are.
He's not going to put hair back when it's gone. He's not going to be able to – well, he probably could sew a cape back together, but you're going to be paying out the ass to have it done.
Right.
So have your ducks in a row before.
The better job you do out in the field is going to be – it's going to come out to a better mount in the end.
Exactly.
So keep that in mind.
Yeah.
Get on YouTube, watch videos how to, you know, cape them and do all that stuff if you don't want your – taxidermy to do it or whatever, but just think about that stuff.
Another thing I was thinking of, if you're going to get your deer processed, a lot of those processors will cape it out for you. Yeah. Now, it's going to cost you. I think it's like $50 sometimes. I have no idea, but I'm just saying, if you kill one, you know you're going to get the meat processed and you have no freaking clue what you're doing, might be best to spend the $50 and have them cape it for you.
Yeah, but also, I mean, this year is a little different, and I know we're going to be talking about this on an upcoming podcast, but a lot of butchers this year, you need to think too, are they going to be accepting deer this year?
Pretty busy.
Because with beef and everything, the way things have been going, I know that a lot of them had decided not to do any deer. So, and like I said, we'll be talking about that in an upcoming episode, but just be thinking about all these things.
Yeah. So anyway, hope everybody enjoyed the show. Pick something up. Feel free to reach out to Stacy if you get something. And he's, like I said, we're in the, Odessa, Missouri area.
Lafayette County.
Yeah, Lafayette County. So feel free to reach out to him. Or if you even have questions and you're not going to be able to use them, but I'm sure he'll at least answer a question for you if you have one. So
yeah, he might know a few guys around your area that do good work.
Do your homework before you pick your taxidermist.
Right.
Don't just pick a number out of a book or out of the phone book or whatever the hell we use now. Yeah. And just go with it. You know, do your homework and, you know, develop that relationship with them, because you might be using that person for the rest of your life.
Absolutely.
So anyway, hope you all enjoyed the show, and we'll talk to y'all later.
See you.